What is up, everybody? This is the Lotus Sports Talk talk show. I am very excited. I'm your host, and we're gonna get into this thing. It's gonna be a really fun show. We're gonna do. We're gonna have a lot of guests talking about baseball, football, basketball, whatever they want to talk about. It's just gonna be a really fun time for me. For anyone that's listening, it should be a really fun show. Right now, I don't have the number for the call-in for the guest. For some reason, it's not popping up. Normally, it does, but I'm having a little bit of difficulty here. So we're going to steer clear of that for now. If you have any questions on the show, there should be on the bottom, there should be a chat. Or you can hit me on Twitter. You can get me on Twitter, and we can talk there. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start right away. We're going to go right into baseball. And let's talk about the Mets for a second. You know, I'm from New York. I'm a Mets fan. And right now, they're playing great baseball. Say what you want. I mean, it's early. It's early. Believe me. But I can't tell you the last time the Mets got off to this good of a start. In fact, actually, the last time they got off to this type of start was the 1986 season. Same record at the start of the season with. We don't know how that ended. But, they're 11-3 right now. Just beat up on the second-place team. They've won now, I believe it's 9 in a row, and they're riding high right now. And it's something that some people may not realize, that this has been in the making for a few years now. You know, you're building a farm system that every year you saw the Mets were never terrible. Were they bad? Yeah, they were bad. But they were never bottom of the league. They always had a couple spurts in the season where it kept you entertained. But you have this young pitching staff of Harvey, Syndergaard coming up, DeGrom, you had Wheeler, Misci, the veterans, and Colon. So you gave yourself a bunch of arms that you knew once everyone was ready, this team was going to be real. And did we think that in this year right now we were going to have a 11-3 start? With injuries to David Wright, Travis d'Arnaud, and I think two others that I'm missing, you have all those injuries along with the players you have. You don't have many veterans besides, Michael Kadir, maybe Curtis Granderson, but he came off to a slow start. So you were really relying on young guys and players who haven't been in the league that long to show up. So that was a big thing, but off to a great start. You're noticing if there's nights where your number three and four hitters are struggling, like there has been one or two nights this year, players like Juan Lagares, Travis d'Arnaud, some nights Wilmer Flores, it seems like when one person goes down, the next person's up just to take it to the next level. And I haven't seen that in a long time for a Mets team. I pointed out, I think it was last Thursday night, it was a game against Philly or Atlanta, one of the two, I'm mistaken if I have it wrong here. They were down about one or two runs going into the eighth inning, and they never gave up. And then, Lucas Duda hits a double, and the Mets get a win, which, again, is something I haven't seen in the past few years. It's different. It's a different thing to see. It's exciting. I haven't been, most Mets fans haven't been excited for 7 years. You walk around the city and you're seeing a lot more Mets hats than Yankees hats, and it's surprising because the Yankees aren't playing that bad. If we're being fair, I'm biased here. The Yankees are 7-7. For what they have and what they're getting at A-Rod right now, that's a pretty good start to the season for them. Can their pitching staff hold up? Can their hitters hold up? I don't know why the Yankees, before the year I was concerned about the Yankees because A-Rod coming back was basically your best hitter because everyone else just goes in and out with injuries, but A-Rod was their best hitter and I was concerned, but to start 7-7 the way he's hitting, my concerns are kind of going away about that team. Can they be a 93-win team now? I mean, I don't think that's realistic. I don't think it's realistic for the Mets to win 93 games. I think it's more realistic to win about 85-86, which will get you a playoff spot, you would think, as a wild card. But, Yankees are a team that could get to 82, 84, around the same as the Mets. Because everyone's going to have their spurts. There's going to be a time where the Mets struggle a little bit. It's going to happen. But hopefully that happens when the Mets have a nice little lead in that division if they can. You know, some other stories around Major League Baseball. You got the Milwaukee Brewers, who are, I actually had them before the season as a potential winner of that division. I really liked the players they had because they didn't make many moves. You know, I liked Braun. I liked the pitching staff, how it was set up. I didn't mind the bullpen, and I was like, maybe this team could get to 90 wins. It's very possible. They've won in their first 14, they've won 2 games, and they're on a 7-game losing streak. So clearly, what I thought was going to happen has not happened. And it's not that Ryan Braun's struggling. It's not anyone struggling. It's just they can't get it together. And, you know, they right before the season start, they gave their manager an extension. And it just hasn't panned out, you know. At some point, you got to fire the manager. I know it sounds crazy to fire a manager but this early, but you got to pull the trigger if you're 2-12. If this gets any worse, the season could be over before, you know, June. And you never want that, especially for a team that was actually possibly going to contend. I mean, I don't think I was the only one that thought the Brewers would have a very good year. And, you know, we keep looking around the league at different scenarios. And I go back one more time to the Yankees. And that division, which we thought could have been okay, has looked, you know, not that bad to start. You have the Red Sox at 9-5, which isn't, you know, the best record in the American League. Then you have the Orioles, Yankees, Rays, and Blue Jays are all within a game of each other. The Rays are 6-8. I thought the Rays were going to be horrible this year. The players they lost, players, you know, they gained weren't that impressive. But you, right now you look at it, that division's really close. Now, how long will that last? I don't know. I don't know if, you know, the Rays and the Orioles and the Yankees are going to drop off. And I don't know if the Red Sox are going to go crazy and start winning games. Red Sox should. I mean, what's going to hold them back is their pitching staff. I think they're one pitcher away from being very, very, very good. And I think the same said for the Yankees. They're one pitcher away from being a 90-win team. As it's constructed right now, I don't see Sabathia, Tanaka, and Pineda winning that division for them. It just doesn't seem realistic for me. At the age of Sabathia, the current situation with Tanaka with his elbow, who knows where he's at with that? And then you got Michael Pineda, who is very good pitcher, but can he carry a team? I don't think so, personally. So that's the status of the Yankees and the Mets. In New York, baseball is okay right now. I mean, Mets are riding high. Yankees are pretty good, pretty consistent, 7-7. Or, you know, they're winning some, they're losing some. It's not really bad, not really good. And then you look at a team like the Tigers and the Royals, where that division, guys, is going to be something. That division is going to be real. They're both 11-3 right now, and the Royals are 7-1, I believe, in their last 8, and the Tigers are 6-2. So they're, when they match up for that series, that's going to be fun, and it's going to be two teams that are going to ride to the end of that season. I think both winning over 94-95 games. One of them should hit 100. I'm not going to say both will, because that's very hard to do in the same division, but one of them is going to hit over 95 games. And, like, the rest of that division right now is pretty bad. You got the White Sox, you got the Indians, you got the Twins. They're all under 500 right now. And not one of those teams are playing, you know, very good baseball right now. So you look at that division, it's very one-sided. And then one more story about MLB is the Houston Astros are leading the AL West. I know the Angels are always, they're always off to a slow start because of the guys they have. They always start slow. Athletics are the same kind of way. Rangers are not that good this year. The players they have are just aren't as good as they've been in past years. Mariners at 5-9. I'd assume they're gonna take off at some point. But for right now, the Astros being 8-6, they gotta be happy. They gotta be really happy with the start they've had because, you know, they're playing good against good teams too. Luis Valbuena, who thought he would even be starting for them, it's five home runs already. They're pitching very well. The bullpen looks very good, which they've been working on. They're a team that, the same as the Mets situation, wanted to grow pitching, and they've done that. And right now, I mean, I'm not going to – the Astros most likely will not be winning the division. But for them to be, you know, up two games right now this early in the season, it's got to be, you know, for the players, it's got to make them feel good. It has to make them feel good. It has to make them want to keep going. And that's – these type of starts are the ones that, you know, start getting you going as the season goes on. We're going to take a very short break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about the current status of the NBA. We are back. We're going to get into the NBA playoffs. We're going to go by series because I've never had a show with you to talk to you about my feelings of each series before. So we're going to start with the game that happened last night, and that was the Celtics and the Cavs. And, you know, the game looked closer than I think it actually was. I think the Cavs are a much better team than anyone else in the Eastern Conference, and I really – maybe the Bulls can contest. I actually picked the Bulls when the playoffs started to win. I'm not going to waver off that, but the Cavs are playing really good basketball right now. It looked like last night they were having fun with the Celtics. And it was almost to a fault because the game was close, but it looks like when you have LeBron, Love, and Irving, who can all run very strong one-on-ones, it's lethal because they can't be stopped. You could stop JR, you could stop their center, Mozgov, and Mozgov's been playing just as well. He's looking like an all-star. So I don't know what team can stop them. Because you could think Bulls. They have length, they have size, but is that really hurting the Cavs? Is, you know, Pau Gasol, Joakim Noah, Nikola Mirotic, are they really going to be able to stop LeBron James and Kyrie Irving? I don't know, but on the same note, the Bulls can fly off the other way and say we're going to use our size, which can very well happen because, you know, the issues of Kevin Love's back could linger. I think the Cavs are playing a level of basketball that we've seen only in the Miami Heat teams in the last few years. That's really it, because LeBron is a different type of athlete. He's a player that can turn it on and turn it off. There's not many players that can just say, I'm going to go score 40 points tonight and do it. There may be three or four players in the league like that. LeBron, Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, and Russell Westbrook. And if you want to put James Harden, you can. There's not many players that, at, you know, just right at the blink can just score 40 points just because they feel like it. LeBron's one of those players. And maybe Kyrie's one of those players, too. And that's scary to have two of those guys on the same team. Because you could say whatever you want about LeBron and the Cavs. You know, they had a great, you know, 3 years. It was a great run. Or how many years, whatever it was. I'm sorry, I could be off in the years. But he never had someone like Kyrie, who is at Kyrie's age, who can play off the ball just as well as on the ball. And Kyrie does things that he's not a legit point guard. I don't know when people are going to realize that. He's not an on-ball point guard that's going to, you know, run the offense. He can run an offense, but he's more comfortable off-ball, coming off screens, grabbing the ball, taking shots, scoring. Not your typical point guard, but that's not the worst thing. Definitely not the worst thing. You look at, I think that, just real quick, I think that series is going to be over in four. I don't think it's close. Celtics may steal one in game three or four, possibly. I don't know. I don't know how the Cavs come out in the next two games, up 2-0. Celtics could steal one. I doubt it. But let's say four in that one. And then you look at the same note, you look at you know, the Bucks and Bulls. The Bulls seem like they're a much better team. Game one was close. Game two was not. I believe the Bulls are the second best team in the East right now. Can they beat the Cavs? I still, like I said before, I don't know with the matchups if they can. I don't really know if that the matchups suit them. I think Bulls versus the Miami Heat with LeBron would have matched up so much better. And it's sad that we never really saw that full team together in Chicago. If you would have told me against last year's Heat, or even 2 years ago Heat, you throw Pau Gasol on the Bulls team and give me Derrick Rose, a healthy Derrick Rose, I think they win that championship. Because I think they had players of all five positions that were just as good as Wade and Bosch. You can argue that. You can say, no. Wade and Bosch were a much better. No, I don't think so. I think Joakim Noah is one of the best centers in the league. Probably top three, in my opinion. You can argue that also. You got a guy like Pau Gasol. Got Butler, Rose, Mirotić. They're all very good players. Now, you could say the same thing. How's Rose going to be? How's his knee going to be? That's very fun. You know, you could argue that. I think right now you're looking at a time where this team, this is their window kind of closing. You have Pau Gasol, who, how many more years can you get a Pau Gasol like that? Not many more. He's not going to be at this level for much longer. And then you have Rose, who knows when one day something's going to happen to him and that's it. His career is going to be over. And I'm not saying it's within a year or two, but you don't know. A guy that's been as injury-prone as him, you don't know when his career is just going to end. So you've got to be careful. Go win a championship. Go take it to the Cavs. I don't know if they can beat them. I personally, right now, don't like their matchups, but take your best shot. You can see they took the other shot this year, getting Pau Gasol. Last year, probably the Tom Thibodeau. So after this year, who knows who's going to be on this team? No more Jimmy Butler, maybe. He could be going somewhere else. Derrick Rose, who knows what Derrick Rose is going to look like next year? Pau Gasol, again, who knows what Pau Gasol is going to look like? Joakim Noah. Who's the Joakim Noah might not get traded? It's crazy, but without Thibodeau, who says the Bulls want him? So I'm going to sort of keep rolling through the East. I know it's a quick stop and start from each topic, but I'm just trying to get a feel of the show, you know, so you guys know, you know, this show might be a little off because it's my first show. You know, so far I feel pretty good with it, but we're going to keep rolling through. Not going to talk much about the Hawks and Nets because I think the Hawks are clearly the better team. I do think the Nets steal a few games here. You saw in Game 1 the veterans. The veterans showed up. Joe Johnson, Brook Lopez, Darren Williams. They kept the game close. Not as much Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson looked rough out there. He looked like he didn't want to be out there. But everyone else, it showed that the Nets are a veteran team. They're going to steal one or two games. Probably, I'm actually going to say, go ahead and limit to the Nets are going to win tonight. Then they're going to lose the first one at home, win one at home, and then lose the rest. So it'll be probably Hawks in six. I do think the Nets win this game tonight. Don't quote me on it, but I do that. Let's go to the next one. Raptors and Wizards. Me watching the Raptors play the way they are right now, and they try to be bullies because they're a very physical team. They try to be, you know, tough, rugged. Once you get to them, once you start scoring on them, it seems they back down. And I saw that last year with the Nets. Guys like, they were trying to be bullied against guys like Pierce, Garnett, Joe Johnson. They're not going to be bullied around. The Nets were a physical team last year, and as are the Wizards this year. Brad Beal, John Wall, Nene Gortat, they're all physical players. And you give them Paul Pierce, it helps them even more, clearly. So I don't think it's close. I think this is a big moment for the Wizards. I think this ends at 5. I don't think Blackhawks really have another game in them. They had their home games, couldn't do anything with it, so that's all I'm going to say about them. I think Wizards win out quickly. We're going to run to the West a little quicker. We're on time constraints. The Houston-Dallas series, I think that's almost basically over at this point. I don't give Dallas much hope of coming back in this one because James Harden's playing the way he is. And if you have Dwight Howard putting up numbers he had last night, I don't know if anybody in the West can stop them. Yes, the Warriors won how many games they did. And by the way, that series against the Pelicans, are going to take one more, and that's going to be it. It's going to go over in 5, in my opinion. But the Rockets, you look at a team like the Rockets where if they play the Warriors and they're getting this out of Dwight Howard, how will the Warriors stop it? The Rockets. Who's guarding Dwight Howard? I know you could say, ooh, they have Lee, Bogut, Green, Draymond Green. I know how good of a defender Draymond Green is, but if Dwight Howard is Dwight Howard, there's not a center in the league that could stop him. Dwight Howard, when he was healthy, was probably one of the top 3 best players in the league. You tell me anybody on the Warriors can stop him? No. And who's stopping James Harden? I know the Warriors play team defense. They got to play defense. They got to do this. They got to do that. But I just feel like it's time that if Dwight Howard and Harden can play well together, you're going to finally see what they were brought to. Say, I got the Warriors winning that series easily. Memphis, Portland, I think that's the one that could be weird. Game 1 looked like it was all Memphis, but I could see Portland making a stink in there. And then you got my favorite series to talk about, and that's the Spurs and Clippers. You know, Spurs are a team that you never want to count them out. They could be down 3-0, and I wouldn't count them out. And then you have the Clippers, who, when is Chris Paul going to take that next step? Me personally, I think it's this year. I think if they can get out of this matchup against the Spurs, which, again, I still think that the NBA is just horrible with the seeding. I think if they should seed it a different way. I don't know how. Everyone has their theories. I don't have a theory because I really don't know what would make more sense. But I know that having the Spurs and Clippers, who both had better records than 3 other teams in the East and 3 teams in the West, have to play each other. I think that's great. I think the fact that, you know, we have the Blazers, who, just because they won a division, get a higher seed than the Spurs, when the Spurs could have been a 2 seed on the final day, that's just not good. It doesn't make any sense. You have two of your best teams who could have realistically met in the conference finals playing in the first round. Rivers, I mean, they're two of the best teams in the league. And they got to play in the first round with one going home. It's great for the viewers, but at the same time, I just don't know. I don't know what they could do to fix that. They have to fix it. But regardless, I don't know if the Spurs can stop the Clippers. I think tonight's a big game. Because if Clippers win this handily, it could be a wash for the Spurs. Because they have a hard time guarding DeAndre and Blake. Tim Duncan. And, you know, he can stop as much as he can, but DeAndre and Blake are very athletic. They can do a lot. And then you have guys like, you know, your shooters can guard that too. So that's not a big factor. And then you have Parker versus Chris Paul. What Parker are you getting? We always talk about that, but it feels like we've been talking about what Parker are you going to get for the last 5 years. And every year, it's either you get a really good Parker, where he's going triple-double and he's shutting your point guard down, or a really bad Parker when he's playing 7 minutes and not doing anything. What are you going to get is my question. I don't know. And that's why I still think the Clippers have more sure things. I would take the Clippers in that series. And probably in 5 or 6. I don't know about 7. I just don't see it going to 7. I think someone's going to win that series somewhere or another. We're going to take another quick short break. And then I'm going to come back with a little hockey talk. And then after that, I'm going to release my first round mock draft. So stick around for that. As I said, I will be releasing my mock draft at about 12:45, around that time. We'll get one more break after we talk about hockey, and then we will be mock drafted. I feel like that'd be a little fun way to get off this, you know, to start this show. Quickly, we're going to talk about hockey. Right now, the way I look at it, I watched most of the playoff games. I think there's one team in the East and one team in the West, and then everybody else. I think you have the Rangers, who are clearly the best team in the East, maybe the best team in the whole NHL. And they show that. They play team hockey. They play team defensive hockey, which we haven't seen in a very long time. Maybe the Kings played it pretty well last year. We can give it to the Kings. But the Rangers do a very good job of complementing their scoring, their goaltending, and their defense. And they're getting some guys back tonight. I can't see the Rangers losing at all in the Eastern Conference. I don't think any team is even remotely as good as them. I think the only team that's even close to them is the Blackhawks, and they're in the Western Conference. So if it wasn't Blackhawks and Rangers in the Stanley Cup final, I would be surprised. I'd be shocked. Because I think the Blackhawks are by far the best team in the West, and I think the Rangers are by far the best team in the East. And I really don't know if it's close. I don't quite know if that's even a discussion at this point. The Rangers to struggle at some series. I don't think they're going to lose. I don't think they'll go to a game seven. I think there's going to be a series. I don't know if it's Montreal. It could be the Capitals if the Capitals get in. That next round could be. I don't really like the Lightning or Wings giving them a series, but any of these teams could push it. They could give the Rangers five or six tough games, but I don't think the Rangers are even close to being a losing team. I just don't. I think the Rangers are. I hate to say it because I'm a Devils fan, but I think they're going to win the Cup this year. And it wouldn't shock me if they won the Cup next year as a two-peat. Mid-season, I sent a text to a buddy, and I said, not mid-season, maybe a little after mid-season, but I said, Rangers are going to win the Cup within the next 2 years. And not only since that time have I thought 100% yes. Now, could it not be this year? No, it couldn't be this year, but next year, one of these years are going to win it. I'm telling them, this is how I feel. And since mid-season when I made that statement, the more I've thought about it, I feel like there's a better chance of them winning this year and next year than just winning one of those years. I think, you know, even if you don't bring a guy like Marty St. Louis back, which you probably will, you're still a top tier in the East next year. Unless, you know, somehow the Devils got five All-Stars. Then maybe we could talk. But I think right now you're looking at a team in the Rangers that are just scary. I think they're scary. I think they'll be scary for the next few years. They finally find a very good coach that lost a couple games in Vancouver because Vancouver just seems to have a jinx where they can't win playoff games. I don't know what it is. But they seem to be having that issue right now. And maybe he needed a new change. He needed a coach, clearly. Because he got them to the promised land now. But he's going to get to the promised land. Now, if they lose in this first round or second round, I'm sorry, Rangers fan. I didn't mean to jinx them. I was just saying what I felt. But, yeah, I think, you know, again, I can't say it enough. I think Rangers have it. But let's go to the other side. Let's go to the Western Conference, the Chicago Blackhawks. And, you know, that was a long game last night. I stayed up until two overtimes, and then I decided I wanted to sleep. Because I didn't feel like waiting because the way they were playing this fast-paced hockey that they were getting shots from all over. They weren't really getting good shots, so it was just going to last forever. And then literally, I guess as soon as I turned it off at the start of the third period, the start of the third overtime period, the Blackhawks won it not much thereafter. And that was it. And I could have stayed up a little bit more, but I was tired. That was a game that happens in NHL playoffs. For some reason, it's never the game that starts at 7 or 8 that goes 3 overtime. It's always the game that starts at 10:30. So the game lasts till 2. I don't get it. I don't know why. There's no overtime game in the Eastern Conference, but the Western Conference, there's like 4 or 5 overtimes. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But all I saw last night was that even if the Blackhawks play their worst game, which at the time last night it looked like they were playing one of their worst games, they're still better than everyone else in the Western Conference. I would love to see a Blackhawks-Rangers matchup. I don't know if the Rangers want to see that. I'm sure they'd rather see the Capitals. I'm sure they'd rather see the Predators, the Blues. I'm sure they'd rather see one of those teams. But I just don't know if it'd be the Blackhawks in a 7-game series. I think every team could beat them if it was a 1-game series, but 7-game series, I just don't see it happening. Don't see the Rangers blowing that type of game this early in the season. I don't know what I just said. I was kind of just rambling. Is it early in the season? It's not, clearly not early in the season. It's very late in the season. It's the playoffs. But yeah, I think it's going to be Blackhawks Rangers in the finals. I kind of want to just, you know, fast forward because I know what's going to happen. It's, you know, just what's going to happen. We're going to take one more short break, about a 4-minute break. We'll come back. We'll get to my mock draft. So stay tight. Let's get the mock draft going. This was a mock for me. Sometimes I'll have mock drafts where what I think they should do, and this one was more of what I think they will do. What fits the team better? And what is going to help them, not just this year, next year, the year after that, the year after that. We'll get it started right away. Let's go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 1. They have a decision in a little bit. They have a sort of decision, I want to call it, because obviously you're going to go Winston. He's the best player in the draft, and he fits them the best. But you also have to think about Marcus Mariota, the quarterback also. Does he fit their system better? I don't know. Then you have Leonard Williams, who, you know, is... Some people argue he's also the best player in the draft. Pair him up next to Gerald McCoy in front of Levante David. and you got a pretty good start to a defense. You know what I mean? But I think it's inevitable. I think the pick's going to be Jameis Winston. I don't quite think it's going to be close. So let's go Jameis Winston, the Bucks at one. Pick two to Tennessee. For the longest time, I did have Leonard Williams there. I thought same thing, sense everything as the Bucks. They could pair up Leonard with, you know, pair him up with the defense they've built there. With Arakpo, with Casey, one of the McCourties, you know, a bunch of new pieces they brought in. They can really make something out of that defense with Leonard Williams. But the more I read into it, now this is one of the spots that dictates the whole draft because of who's going to get picked and who's not going to get picked. I do think that the pick will be Marcus Mariota. I think they could do whatever they want about Mettenberger, which I don't think it makes sense to draft Mariota, but I feel like they need that quarterback. And Mettenberger, they gave him a shot last year. He wasn't awful. Wasn't good, but he wasn't awful. Definitely wasn't awful. Can he get better? I don't know. It's a league where you need that quarterback. Go get Marcus Mariota and try to make something of yourself. Then pick three would be the Jaguars, and I feel like he falls right in their lap. They take Leonard Williams. I don't see any way of him getting out of the top three. And if he does, he won't get past top four because the Raiders won't. So he's all these people that he may fall, you know, may get to the Jets, may get to the Bears, may get to the Giants. Not happening. I can guarantee you that he's not getting past four. But he'll go to the Jaguars here at three. I think that makes the most sense. So, yeah, Jaguars take him. They start, you know, a good defense. They don't have that big defensive anchor right now. They drafted Bortles last year. They drafted Jokel. They drafted Marquise Lee. They drafted Allen Robinson. Get your defender that's your going to be your future in that. Make it happen. At four, we have the Raiders. Now, people are saying Dante Fowler, Kevin White, Vic Beasley. I think wrong. I think it's going to be Amari Cooper. I think they're going to go with the guy that's the more sure thing, the better route runner, the guy that tracks the ball better than anyone else I've ever scouted. Now, granted, I didn't scout Calvin Johnson. I didn't scout any of those guys. But I don't think I've ever scouted someone that tracked the ball better than Amari Cooper. And he really didn't have the best, you know, the best player thrown at him in Alabama. And he looked better than Kevin White. Kevin White, I'm not a believer in if somebody comes to the combine and was a 40-yard dash, I don't want to move them up my boards for that. You know, tell me I'm crazy, but I don't know how many times you're going to see a player run just a straight 40 yards without anybody touching him, and that's how you're going to grade somebody, and you're going to move him over somebody like Amari Cooper, who had two full seasons of success at the college level in SEC. No. Give me Amari Cooper at four. Let's roll right through. Go to the Redskins. I think people are going to say they need an edge. They need linemen. I think they go Kevin White, and it might sound crazy, but last few weeks, there's been a lot of late discussions that they could be a team that can, you know, go to the draft and grab a receiver. I think they do. I think Kevin White is a guy that I'm not high on, but I know he's, regardless before the combine, he was still a top 12 player for me. So I just didn't move him over someone like Mark Cooper. But give me Kevin White to the Redskins. Pair him up with Deshaun and Garcon. That's gonna be something lethal. Give Robert Griffin every tool to succeed. And when Robert Griffin fails, because I think Robert Griffin's not a good quarterback. I think he's got in his head, and I think he's shot. So when he fails, you bring in a new quarterback, and you already have three pieces at wide receiver. Maybe you don't see Garcon after this year. Could be. And I see DeSean Jackson, Kevin White. That's a good start. And Alfred Morris. That's a great start to the offense. So six. My New York Jets. New York. The guy they want is going to fall right in their lap. I think the three guys, one of the three guys they'll take is Marcus Mariota, Amari Cooper, or Dante Fowler. Fowler's here. Fowler's a Jet. I grade Fowler out as the best edge rusher in the class. You watch him, and he just looks so pure out there. He looks natural. He looks like he's having fun. And you don't see that Vic Beasley. That's why everyone's saying Vic Beasley over Fowler. No. No. Fowler can stop the run game. I don't see that with Vic Beasley. He's a third down pass rusher. That, yeah, he's still a top 15 guy because you need those third down pass rushers in this league. And if you already have a good run stopper, that's fine. But don't give me that you're going to take Fowler after him. I just don't want to hear it. Give me Dante Fowler to the Jets, edge from Florida. Then you go to the Bears, sorry. The Bears are going to take Vic Beasley. Right after that, they're going to go Vic Beasley, edge from Clemson. Like I just said, Vic Beasley, he's a third down pass rusher that can't stop the run. But if you can bring people off the run to support him, you're in good shape. Give me Vic Beasley to the Bears. Now we go to the Falcons. This is tough. I thought Trey Waynes, which wouldn't have been the worst idea. I thought even Melvin Gordon. I thought Todd Gurley. I thought wide receivers on the board. I thought, you know, Eric Kendricks, maybe a linebacker. Who knows? I'm just going crazy. The pick's going to be Bud Dupree. I like his, you know, his rawness. You brought in the edge. You already brought an edge rusher in the offseason. You brought in Brooks Reed. Guys that can help out. And now you give him someone like Bud Dupree. I think you're in a very good spot. Falcons need that raw pass rusher. And they would love to have Vic Beasley or Dante Fowler. But they're not going to fold him. Mock draft. So give me Bud Dupree. And let him form out to be the Falcons' edge rusher of the future. Pick nine is the Giants, and I think this Giants need a lot of things. Giants fans are saying, we're going to take a receiver, we're going to take Cooper, we're going to take Wade, we're going to take, Devontae Parker. I feel they need either linebackers, D-tackle, or offensive linemen. And I think right on the board from Iowa is Brandon Scherff, and just let him be great. Play him, but I don't want to see them playing him like Pugh. Pugh, I've seen it over it all, is a natural tackle. He's too small to be inside. He is a natural tackle. You can move him at guard as much as you want. Gonna be a natural tackle. I think Scherff is a natural guard. And that's a good one too. You already have Schwartz, you already have those guys. It's a very good start to that offensive line taking Scherff. At pick 10, we have the Rams, and a lot of Rams fans want offensive linemen. They want a receiver. Neither one. I think they're going to take Trey Waynes. They're going to make that defense very good. You brought in Fairley. You already have Aaron Donald. You already have Quinn. Pretty good linebacking crew. Your defensive backs are already pretty good. And now you pair Waynes up with Jenkins. That's lethal. That is just lethal. So, I'm going to say Rams take Waynes. I think it's a good spot for him. And go to 11. And one of my things in the draft that this pick is such a sure thing to me that when it happens, it's kind of like the Chargers last year when they took Brett. I knew that probably around New Year's after the season ended. It just made too much sense. I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to have to stop for a second. I just looked at the TV, and I see that in the last mock draft for Todd McShay, he had the Jets taking Todd Gurley at 6. Sorry, I just got really distracted. That is a horrible, horrible, horrible choice at 6. But I'm just going to go back to my mock draft and pretend I didn't do that. Like I was saying, sure thing for the Vikings. They're going to take Devontae Parker. I think that's been known. I think if he's there, he's theirs. I think it's going to happen. I think it's a sure thing. That's one of my locks. Every other pick, it kind of depends. Winston's a lock, I think, for me, and I think Parker's a lock at 11. That's really all I know right now. It's really tough. 12, I think, first of the Browns picks, I think they get the guy they wanted. They take Danny Shelton, D-tackle, Washington. And wow, that'd be impressive for them. They need a little more inside presence. They need a little more defensive presence. They get that with Danny Shelton. They get that with Danny Shelton, and they move on. The Saints at 13, another team with two first-rounders, they can take Randy Gregory. They can afford to miss. They don't want to miss, but they can afford to miss. Take a shot. Take a risk with Gregory. You get a guy who could have been a top-five player here just because maybe small fulfilled issues. Like, who knows how big of a deal it is. But I think him at 13 is a good spot for Randy Gregory. And you got your 14th player, I think, at the Dolphins. People don't like him for the Dolphins, but I think it's Marcus Peters. You need to pair somebody up with Brent Grimes. They had Quentin Finney last year who looked awful. Like, he looked bad. He did not look good last year. So you give them Marcus Peters, let them be great. 49ers at 15, maybe it's too early, but I think they need to address this before it gets too late. I think they take Mr. Kendricks from UCLA, Eric Kendricks, UCLA linebacker, can play a little outside, mostly inside, can do a lot of different things. I like him at 15 for them. You go to 16, you have the Texans. Dorial Green Beckham. People say that's too early, that's too big of a risk. They need to replace Andre Johnson. Get that big. For the longest time, I had them taking Brett Hundley. I thought it was a good spot for Hundley. But now it just seems like get Dorial Green Beckham. He's that big receiver that if he stays on the field and stays smart, God, could be good. Chargers are going to take Todd Gurley. I think Chargers can afford if he's missed a little bit. They don't want to afford that, but they have a couple guys that can sit in there for a little bit. I think Todd Gurley is a great player for them. You need that running back in that division with Jamaal Charles and, Latavius Murray, those type of guys. You need that physical linebacker, and give me Todd Gurley. 18 to the Chiefs. We're going to go cornerback. Kevin Johnson, cornerback from Wake Forest. Spot for Kevin Johnson. I think he's a guy that rose late, but I think he fits on a team like Kansas City. A lot of people say maybe Eric Rowe because of the ability to play safety. I think it's too early for Rowe there. We go to pick 19. We got the Browns. They're going to go Shane Ray, Edge, Missouri. I think he could drop even more than this. The Browns get Shane Ray and Danny Shelton, two future guys for that defense, you know. They're players that can really guide that defense in the future, and Shane Ray really makes sense for me there. He really does. I think he could drop further. And I don't like him as a prospect, but he does fit what the Browns are doing with that pass rusher. I think the Eagles at 20, Byron Jones, cornerback from UConn, I think it's a big need for them. I think he's rose late, but I think he's got a very good ability to be a natural corner next to Maxwell, who I think they overpaid for Maxwell, but that's okay. Need to overpay in this league. I think the Jets overpaid for Revis, and I think they overpaid for Kamari. That's another story for another time. they got the Bengals. I've mocked this for a while. I think they take Devin Smith, receiver. Give them more tools to succeed. Have Devin Smith, A.J. Green, and Mohamed Sanu. I think that's a good one to play, especially with Sanu and A.J. Green both paying free agents. One of them will stay. It's going to be Green. And most likely Sanu leaves. So get Devin Smith. Start looking at the future a little bit. 22 is going to be Pittsburgh. They can take Landon Collins, Alabama. I think he's a very good fit for that defense. They need a safety, so go out there and get it done. Detroit Lions at 23 are going to take Eric Flowers, offensive tackle for Miami. I think that's a good fit for them. He's good value there, good offensive lineman. I like him over Pete, not by much, but you'll see in a second. At 24, the Cardinals are going to take Melvin Gordon, running back Wisconsin. I think he fits. They need that running back. They haven't had that in a while. They went through a lot of running backs last year. I'm not a big Andre Ellington fan, so Melvin Gordon's my guy there. At 25, the Panthers are going to take Stanford, offensive tackle, Anders Pete. Very good offensive tackle, can stand in and protect Cam Newton, something they haven't had for a while. Right now they're relying, I believe, on Michael Orr to be that starting tackle, and that's kind of scary. So, yeah, we'll move on. We have not much time left here, so we'll try to run through them quickly.
quickly, or I should have started this at like 12:30, but it's okay. The Ravens are going to take Malcolm Brown, defensive tackle, to replace Nada and help that defensive line out. Cowboys going to take Eric Rowe, cornerback safety. I think that makes sense with the cornerback issues they've had and, you know, stuff like that. So give me Eric Rowe as 27. At 28, Denver, they need some offensive line help at all positions. So we're going to go from Florida State, play center, play guard, tackle, Mr. Cameron Irvin. I think he fits them nicely. The Colts at 29, they're going to go Mr. Jordan Phillips from Oklahoma. They would have really liked Malcolm Brown for Texas. I think he would have fit them pretty well, but, you know, their philosophy, I think that would have been a nice fit for Malcolm Brown as well as the Colts. I think they would have, you know, really played well with each other, but I think next best thing is Jordan Phillips. Packers are going to take from Oregon, defensive lineman, Mr. Eric Armstead, gives them a little depth at each position. Saints, cornerback Collins, Jalen Collins from LSU with their second pick. And then the Patriots are going to take from Pittsburgh offensive tackle, T.J. Clemens. That's going to run through our mock draft. Any questions, you can hit me on Twitter there. I felt like this show went pretty well. It was a little rough because being my first show, it was hard to get through things at times. It just prolonged it. I got a little more strategy, maybe make it a half-hour show without my mock drafts and have less breaks. Any questions, comments, feel free to tweet at me. That's it. On Twitter at nbarlotta_draft. Always contact me there. Follow me there. We're going to call it a show for today. Thank you guys for listening. If you didn't listen, still thank you. Have a good day, guys.